must speak and act to save it. This novel is set prior to the federal government's intervention in 2007 into the Northern Territory. Di Morrissey, July 2009. To Sonoma Grace, my first grandchild. With the hope that you will experience the natural beauty of Australia and know a country which has been cared for, respected, and left for generations to enjoy and appreciate, and that you too will fight to keep it so. There has come a time when we can no longer remain silent, but speak up for our country, which is being sold, abused, mined, depleted, drained, overworked, overloved, its plants and animals becoming endangered and exterminated faster than we can know them. Our country is silent, so we must speak and act to save it. This novel is set prior to the federal government's intervention in 2007 into the Northern Territory. Di Morrissey, July 2009. Chapter 1. It was a short, dead-end street, lined with small white cottages. Years before, children had ridden bikes and scooters along the quiet road in safety. Now cars lined it, or were parked on the grass and double-parked at the rear of the houses in a small laneway. Children's laughter was absent. Men and women came and went in a hurried, sometimes harried manner. Lights frequently burned late into the night. Behind the tiny street rose a large tower spiked with aerials, antennae, and metal dishes. Around it were large grey cement studios, surrounded by a bitumen parking lot, filled with trucks, vans, and a helicopter landing pad. The shadow of the Network 11 tower fell across the red rooftops, a sentinel that dominated the surrounding residential suburbs. A car pulled up and double-parked outside the cottage with number 8 on its letterbox. A girl jumped out and hurried up the path, opening the front door, where a small stenciled sign said, "Our Country." The noise inside contrasted with the silent street. Chatter, people calling to each other, ringing phones, and from what was once a bedroom, voices on a tape that was being rewound forwards and backwards to edit. She tossed her car keys in a bowl on the table inside the front door. Like all the other key rings there, it had a tag attached to it for identification. She strode into the kitchen and poured herself a cup of coffee from the large coffee maker. A man was making himself a piece of toast. "Morning, Stew. I've parked behind you. You must have got here early."
"Oh, I've been editing all night. What have you got on this week, Veronica?"
"Chasing Stories. We're a bit thin on the ground. Everything seems a bit too peaceful and dull."
"That might change. Andy was looking for you."
"I'm travelling. See you, Stew."
As he took a bite of his toast, he watched the pretty senior producer stride down the hallway. The word petite certainly described Veronica Anderson. She was average height, but with a narrow frame and tiny bones, yet her slim shape belied her energy and vibrant personality. She was strong, too. He'd seen her lift camera cases, help a crew carry equipment, and she never seemed to tire. She was firm and determined, but could also be a lot of fun. Veronica had a gutsy laugh and could tell a good story. At 29, she was younger than some of the production team she oversaw, but everyone liked and respected her. She went into what had been the lounge room of the house, which now served as the central production office. In the centre was a large table covered in newspapers and magazines, with a dozen chairs pulled up around it. The rest of the room contained a sofa, a small desk with a computer, phone and fax machine, filing cabinets, a large whiteboard, and two TV sets both going at once. A tall, distinguished-looking man with glasses pushed back on his dark, grey-streaked hair was rifling through a pile of files and newspaper clippings.